This is an interview with Anne Harris on Friday, 5th of October 2012. The interview is for the purposes of the Oharu Valley Oral History Project for Wellington City Libraries. The interviewer is Rebecca Chilton, and the interview is being recorded at Anne's home in Oharu Valley. The recording equipment is a Marantz solid state recorder, and this is track one. So Anne, we were just talking before that you obviously moved into the valley at some point. How long have you been here now?
Years. Oh, about 50 years
about
it 50 is.
Years.
It is, yes.
And what? How did you come to be in Oharu?
Well, I grew up from the age of 10 in Kandala, and through the Bible Club and Scouts met my husband, and we decided that it was too expensive to live in Johnsonville or Kandala, so we decided to come over and find some land, which was, we did have a car in those days, so the land, the country, rural outlook sort of enticed us. So we came over several times and interviewed some of the locals, and one particular day I remember vividly, we came on Mrs. Rhea, who was an old identity of the valley, who lives down by the crossroads, and she welcomed us in, she and her husband, and made us a cup of tea, and we talked about land. But the funny thing about the morning tea was she gave us home-baked bread, not funny but nice, but the way she cut it, she held it up against her bust, very ample bust, and sliced it with a knife towards her. We were both looking aghast, but fortunately she didn't injure herself, and we had homemade bread, homemade butter and honey from her own hives, and it was really quite a treasure. But even more so, she told us about a piece of land, and so we went and visited the person that owned it, who was over across the crossroads, and they said, oh yes, we could let you have some land opposite. It used to be where their old cow bale, where they milked the cow right on the corner, and we liked the look of it. It was small, it was half an acre, which was large to us, but these days it's a small holding. And we negotiated with them, and for £600 we got our piece of land. But it was bare, it was covered in gorse, and needed a bit of work on it, but we got it made into a proper section, and then we thought, oh, what are we going to do now? We're fortunate they had an insurance that we thought, oh, well, that's good, we can get our house, but we'll cash in on the insurance. Alas, they'd finally said that was out of their lending area, so we had to go back and think about this. So we decided, I was a hairdresser and my husband was an accountant, we decided, well, blow them, we'll build it ourselves. You could do that in those days. So with the aid of the apprentice carpenter's guidebook, we spent 2 years weekends. We built it right from the ground, and it's still here. It must have been in the early, let me see, I was 22, I think, and I'm 57 now, so work that out anyway.
So was it just the two of you building
it by yourself?
Did you get help from the locals?
No, the locals were all farmers in those days, and fairly widely spaced, although the man over the road was also building his own house, so at least he had the other half of our acre, basically. It was split, bisected by the road. And it seemed a long time, but it was fun. We enjoyed it. I remember one day the neighbour's goat came in. We'd just got the floor down and the windows up, and the goat came in the back, and I thought, oh no, I could see it galloping across the floor towards the window, and I did a pretty good, I thought, rugby tackle and grabbed it before it crashed through the window. It was quite funny. There were a few funny things happened in those days. It was like the traffic. I remember where I had to get up and speak to the city council a few years ago when they wanted to make the speed limit. They wanted to increase the speed limit, and I said, look, it's not a good idea. There's so much traffic out here now. And I got up and spouted my little tale about the time I came out to paint the front of the house, which was that wall in those days, and I was all on my own. A weekday, I got up the ladder with my paint pot and brush and painted a bit, and I tried got down, but I discovered that a ram had got in and decided to visit me. And it would not let me down the ladder. And I spent the whole day up the ladder. It just, you know, butted me each time. And I couldn't call on anyone because there was no traffic went past. I think the little story was lost on the audience. So they did laugh politely, but it was just to illustrate how little traffic there was then as regard now. It's just streams past here. It's a busy from bicycles to motorbikes and cars and trucks and you name it.
So do you remember the day that you moved in officially, or did it happen over a period of time?
Oh my word, do I remember that. Yes, it was we were just sitting down to have our tea. I'd cooked it and we were just sitting down, and there was a most almighty crash. I've never heard anything like it, and lights all went out. And so we got out and we went down to the crossroads, and a tree had just, absolutely still night. Sometimes pine trees do that, and it had crashed across the power lines, the neighbour's garage, squashing his car, and of course all the neighbourhood were out. Yes, I'll never forget the day we moved in here.
That was a good way to meet the neighbours.
It was indeed. Although in those days it was very, very friendly. It was a real community. It still is in its own way, but there are a lot of lifestylers out here now and people with money.
So moving into the community, coming from the outside as it were, did you feel part of the community quite quickly?
Or? Yes, because there was a women's group formed a few years before I came here. Just so that women could meet each other and spend a bit of time. And it was sort of the excuse, or the purpose, was to raise money to keep the historic church going, which, by the way, is over 140 years old and now. And it's persisted ever since. It's had its ups and downs, but it's been a focus for the women in Oharia Valley. You've probably heard of it, yes. And my daughter Viv's president at the moment, so the younger people are fortunately starting to take over and do their bit.
So you would have been one of the earlier members?
Yes, yes. Yeah. We were called Mrs. Then the husband's name, Harris, and Mrs. So-and-so husband's name. And it was really funny. We were reading through the minutes recently, and we were laughing like mad, because you just don't do that now. All women have their own name, not the name of their husbands. But unfortunately, when the children were one was two, and my son was two, and my daughter was, no, he was three and she was five, my husband and I parted company, and I continued living here, and I soon learned how to be a solo rural dweller, what with pumps for water and cleaning out the gutters and everything. But it's been a great learning curve over the years, and I haven't regretted a moment of it.
And did you find it felt any different as part of the community once you're on your own, or was it just the same?
No, actually, my husband had wanted me to go to Auckland, and he'd get a place for us there, but and I didn't want to leave here. And he said, oh, you'll never manage to exist there. He said, the neighbours, you can't depend on the neighbours. My neighbours were wonderful. I'd find firewood delivered. I'd find all sorts, and I only had to ask people, and they would give me a hand. And I soon learnt that you don't overdo that. It's only in desperate circumstances, which is good because it builds your own independence anyway. No, I can sincerely say that my neighbours have been a great support, and they continue to be, actually. And it's a great little place, the valley.
Absolutely. Yeah, and so your children were born after you'd moved into the valley?
Yes.
Yeah, and were they born actually in the valley or in hospital?
No,
or?
In the Wellington Public Hospital, yes.
So you're still quite close into town and all those amenities.
That's right. I don't really think there's any other community quite like O'Hare Valley in New Zealand. It's so close to the capital city, just over the hill, and we've got the total rural atmosphere, apart from the traffic, and Wellington City, when it's all its amenities and parking problems, close by.
How often would you go into town when, say, the children were young?
Oh, when they were young, I did go quite often. I had had quite a few affiliations with the city, but I felt, yes, I needed to keep contact. But over the years, and especially now, I just don't bother to go into the city. I'd rather go to Johnsonville or Porirua or the Hutt. I love Petone. Tony's my favourite place.
Lots of good shops there.
Yes. And you can still park there outside the shop you want to go to. That's the thing I find about Wellington City. Now, you can't do that. You just can't.
And so, from what other people we've talked to and things, it sounds like there was quite an active social life in the valley within the community. Any particular things that stand out for you?
Yes, I remember our first progressive dinner. Have you heard about that?
I have heard a little, but tell me more.
Oh, it was wonderful. It was such a novelty, and most of the houses, the people in the valley took part in it. So we were divided up into groups, and we had our first course. And then it was such fun because at about the same time, everybody moved houses, and there were cars whizzing backwards and forwards in the valley and tooting at each other as they went past. And then we all gathered after the main course for desserts in one place. And it was most successful. And I remember subsequent ones, some of the funny bits. Somebody got a bit obstreperous, too much drink, I think, and threw one of the women into the pool that was at that house. And the husband was so incensed that he picked up the wife of the person that had done the original throwing in and threw her in. And she was not amused, as you can imagine. Neither of them were. But nobody's ever forgotten that. It was funny.
One of those things that's talked about for many years after.
Yeah, well, that's true. But they, like all things, the novelties, it sort of lost its novelty value and we didn't have them. We have perhaps had a couple many years after when new people came into the valley, but the originals were the fun. They were fun.
And what do you think made the difference back then to now?
I think possibly the school was a great hub for the valley, and perhaps the church in a smaller way, and the congregations and the gatherings at school were the main focus of the social parts of the valley. It was a tragedy when they closed the school down, it really was, because we had picnics. School picnics was always fun, and the school concert in the local hall was always fun, especially when everything went wrong. Their performances weren't that polished all the time, and of course that was a great amusement to the audience. I remember one poor lady who was the prize giving, the wife of some dignitary. She must have gone to the toilet before she got up on stage, and she tucked the dress up into her belt, and nobody could say anything about it. Total embarrassment, dear.
And I know some of the people we've spoken to that grew up as children here, they've spoken of the wonderful freedom that they had. What was that like as a parent, sort of just...
Oh, great, because there was no fear of your child being abducted or anything. They could go out and roam up and down. My daughter had a horse, and she would go off riding, and oh, you just didn't think of danger. Road day, they walked to school. These days, children are all taken to school. It's no matter how far, and oh, no, you just didn't think of it in those days. A happy, safe place.
And I imagine all the parents kind of kept an eye out anyway, just taking note of things around them, or?
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, you were aware of the time the children were supposed to be there. This is another advantage of living in a Harry Valley, because when the children came home from school, they were home. Everybody else was too far away to play with each other. And the same goes when they went to college. So taxi came down to the crossroads, picked them up, took them to college, brought them home, and they had their own pursuits at home. And they didn't suffer peer pressure in the same way that a lot of children in city schools do, suburban schools, which was a blessing, because they grew up very confident adults, really, both of them, which is good. Great for me as a solo parent, because I should have had, well, not should have, but a lot of people expect that the children of solo parents are unruly and whatnot, but fortunately, mine weren't.
And just thinking about some of the differences growing up in a more rural area, things like power cuts and sort of, I know Viv spoke about having a shared phone line and things like that. What sorts of things do you remember?
Oh, yes, the party line. Pick up the receiver. Working? Yes. Wait a while. Pick up the receiver. Working? But after the third time, the other people on the other end would get... Yes, you had to be very considerate. But that's all right. I don't have much memory of it being a terribly difficult time. But it was... I suppose it was good when they... Yeah, I'd forgotten about party lights. Yeah. And the road used to be unsealed, but it was quite nice when they sealed it. Seems so long ago that you sort of, when things are modernised, you forget about the other. The thing that I think the school picnics and the gatherings and the pet days, they were such fun, the pet days. You'd get everything. I know one child brought a goose along tethered to a trailer and to a little, you know, trolley. And I remember one mother being terribly upset because her dog was on heat and she didn't realise it. All the other dogs were very interested. That made a great highlight for that pet day. But yes, they were really good. And I think the fact that the school closing down sort of stopped all that, and the people that have come to live in the valley subsequently haven't experienced it, which is sad, really. Very sad.
And sort of other sort of social gatherings. I know we've heard about things like the annual Christmas.
Yes, it's well, in the early days, the Guild used to organise the, and it was just women only for the first number, about the first 10 years, I suppose. And we used to have a lot of fun. I can remember I had a counter along there, and we did an operation sort of thing in silhouette, sort of. All the audience was sitting out there, and I remember we had another dress up night, and I'm sure I've still got someone was dressed up as Salome, and I'm sure I've got her jewel still in my septic tank. We still talk about that, and then we decide, well, perhaps we'd make it, we'd allow the husbands to come along, so we'd broadened up, and it was still run along the same, much the same themes, just small skits, and they get together. But now, since my daughter's taken it on, it's becoming a full blown review sort of thing, which has takes a great deal of organising. I don't know how long that's going to last. We may revert back to the small 10-minute skit. Which were fun. More fun for the people doing it, though, I'm sure, than the audience, because they were pretty basic, but not much acting.
That sounds like pretty much anyone living in Ahara in the valley was included.
Oh, yes.
Everyone was in there.
That is a must as far as the valley's concerned, that everybody that comes into the valley is welcome to join in with any of the activities as such. And it's been improved too by the internet, because we have there's about 100, just over 100 homes in the Mediate Valley, and they're all linked by email. So anything coming up, or if anybody wants anybody information to give out, it's easy, much easier than the old days. But it's still, you know, telephone was good in the early days.
And I imagine too, in times of adversity, if people needed help or things happened, that the community rallied together.
Although it doesn't happen very often, because most farming people are very resourceful, and they don't. I'd rather live here in an emergency than anywhere else, I think, because people do. They just help each other. I was actually in Auckland when they had the wahine, but then the valley was closed off. You've heard of that, I suppose, yes. And so I didn't experience that, but people pulled together and helped each other out there, which was good. And I remember a tree coming down over the main highway recently. Oh, I've never seen so many farmers with their chainsaws. I thought there's going to be a terrible accident here. They were macho chainsawing, and they got the tree removed because there was a wedding on, and the bride had to get out. So things like that. It's sort of, yeah. And then power cuts, of course, everybody's got their gas bottles or their barbecues and things like that. So.
Do you still have quite a few power cuts?
Oh, yes. Every now and again. We seem to have a spate of them, which is annoying. But then gas is very good, gas barbecues, so we can all light a fire.
Yeah, some of the, I think Viv spoke of it actually too, about when you had power cuts, and they used to look forward to it as children.
Well, having sort of the candles.
Yeah, the candles and the shows and things. Yeah. So, yeah, sounded good. And so I imagine you had to be quite sort of resourceful yourself as well.
I've developed into an extremely practical woman. I can do anything practically. Yeah. Even at, 76, I bought a camper van and I go off camper vanning now, so it's I'd never be able to do that if I'd had to depend on other people, I'm sure. It's just,
yeah, you've just had that opportunity to
that's right. If you want to do it, do it.